Hello and welcome to this Wednesday webcast with me, Scott Casanrenny, himself,
Al Coates.
And tonight our very special guest, who some strange man that we've brought in off the street, I think. But I don't know how to introduce him.
Well, I can introduce him if you want me to, if you're really desperate.
Yes, go on, yeah. Oh, here's them chiming clocks again.
Oh, you can hear them in the background, can't you? No, I was going to say that this is Tris Casanrenny, who is an experienced carer of children. He is a... and you are the founder and CEO of FASD Ireland. Is that a fair representation of who you are?
Yes, good evening to you both. I am, as it happens, the founder and CEO of FASD Ireland, also, which has been in operation since September of the 9th last year.
I have a feeling that you're probably T-Boy and General Dogsbody as well at the present time. Is that fair?
I feel a little bit like Manuel in Fawlty Towers. Everywhere you go, I pop up.
Excellent, excellent.
That is true. Yeah, and just so happens that you are my husband, but we'll gloss over that because, you know, this is a podcast. We're here to inform, we're here to educate, so we're gonna, you know, we're just gonna treat it as a normal kind of podcasty webcast
thing. Absolutely.
And it's kind of an exclusive for us in terms of two things, really. One is it's not really focusing on adoption and fostering, so that's the first thing. But secondly, because it's Ireland, and you know, I guess we're solely kind of looking at FASD in Ireland and kind of what's going on there in this kind of episode, this episode. So yeah, it'll be an interesting one, but hopefully people will be interested. If you've got any comments or questions, then pop them where you would pop them, I assume, in the comments. I don't know, where is this streaming?
This is on Facebook. It'll be on a couple of places in Facebook. So we'll, if you've got comments, we'll keep an eye on them. If people have got questions, because I think that people will have questions. I mean, FASD in the UK is probably quite well known, but in Ireland, I think that's probably an area that is, yeah, it's a new kind of proposition, isn't it, in relation to where we're going. So if I can ask...
I think it's fair to say, Al, that certainly my own experience of FASD in Ireland is that it's been around for a fair while, but it's never really been acknowledged. And even, you know, today in 2022, we struggle for recognition, we struggle for support, and we struggle to raise awareness. Essentially, FASD Ireland came into being to address those struggles.
But you're getting ahead of me. You are getting, you've gone all media savvy on me so that you get well ahead of me. your media training's kicking in well and truly there. The question I have really to start with is, because it, you know, it's FASD Ireland and clearly you're not Irish, or you don't have an Irish accent anyway, so I'm not going to make any presumptions about that. So can you tell me a little bit about how... You know, what is the connection to Ireland? You know, why FASD Ireland? A bit of sort of before the story.
Okay, well, I first moved to Ireland in 1996. I had previously been a railway station manager at Gatwick Airport for my sins, and a new airline was setting up in Shannon Airport called AB Airlines, and it was opening up a new market to Gatwick Airport. They wanted somebody who knew the airport inside out, and so that was what brought me to County Clare. And really, I haven't looked back. And I suppose I've probably answered the bit about why FASD Ireland, but my connection to FASD, as a few people watching this will know, is that Scott and I have adopted three boys, and FASD does feature in our children, well, a couple of them anyway, certainly. And so we unwittingly became very quickly educated in FASD a number of years back, and we've really been chasing, I suppose, proper support for not only our own children, but subsequently every other child that we learn about or come into contact with that has FASD, or not necessarily has a diagnosis of FASD, but there is a thought that they may have FASD.
Well, can we start with that then, really. When you say FASD, it's fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which people are maybe familiar with, but can you kind of make real sense of that? What is that? What, you know, I'll play ignorant. Where does it come from?
Okay, well, essentially FASD is an umbrella term. It covers four types of alcohol-related, if you like, disabilities. I don't know if disabilities is too strong a word, but certainly alcohol-related situations, circumstances, symptoms that affect fetuses and babies and young children, and then onto young adults. Essentially, it comes from consumption of alcohol when either somebody is planning to conceive or when they are already pregnant. So that would be the key times that FASD will impact on a child, on a baby, is when either they are being conceived or when they are growing in the womb.
And I mean, my next question is then, in relation to that, because it's an umbrella term, and it's also there's an element of it being, like you say, on a spectrum. So there's people who are significantly impacted by that, and people less so, to a point of, I guess, not discernible. What does that look like in reality for a child and a family? What are the impacts on, you know, on living with the condition?
Well, I mean, there are 428 comorbid conditions that go with FASD, and I'm not going to list all of them for you.
Why not? Well, because we've got a night.
I can if we want to.
Just give us the top 100.
Turn off all of the people that are watching. I mean, it's important to say that people with FASD will have a number of conditions that we would all be familiar with, but there would be groupings of them. So ADHD, for example, will feature in a number of those children. The inability to sleep for long periods of time or to have a regular sleep pattern, again, is going to be a strong feature with the child with FASD. There was a line of thought for a long, long time that children with FASD would have facial dysmorphia. That's where certain features on the face wouldn't have formed properly, but we accept and science accepts now that that's only relevant really and visible in 10% of cases of children, and that's where alcohol is consumed very early on in the pregnancy. What I would say is with facial dysmorphia, some of that isn't visible because it can affect the jawline, for example, which, you know, people's mouths grow around their teeth, but their jawline may have lots and lots of dental issues that you couldn't necessarily see, but you will learn of as the child is growing up, and then that causes some significant work to have to be done to free up the jaw of the teeth. So there can be, you know, some real issues there for children growing up with FASD. The key here, though, is to make sure that they have a diagnosis, and that's the difficult bit. Currently in Ireland, we don't have a pathway to diagnosis for FASD. And I suppose different to the UK is that a lot of children with FASD will still live in birth families, whereas the UK experiences that a lot of children that are care experienced will have FASD, but they won't live in their birth family. And of course, the difficulty with children and young people living in their birth families is that there's a stigma attached to that of shame and blame. And it was a key kind of consideration when setting up FASD Ireland about that issue of shame and blame, because Ireland has always had a very close relationship with alcohol, to the point that, you know, in the 50s, the trolleys were going around the hospitals with bottles of Guinness on for the pregnant women to say, drink these. So your children don't, and the woman doesn't suffer from anemia.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been, it's just been a lifestyle for many, many years. And so this isn't about blaming anybody. This isn't certainly about shaming anybody. It's about saying, look, you know, we've learned through science, we've learned through children or babies being born with differences that are stopping them, holding them back in life. So we want to readdress or actually address this for the first time and educate people so that they now know the risks, and they are absolute risks of drinking alcohol when trying to conceive or when pregnant. And that's the issue. That is in itself is probably the single biggest issue in Ireland why FASD has not been at the forefront of people's minds in the last 2 or 3 years, you know.
Yeah. And I guess there's a question that leads on from what you've just said, but going back a little bit, I was thinking, so when we're talking about children who are impacted by, you know, FASD, and that then manifests itself, that can be physical or, you know, behavioural, which I guess it is, you know, the behavioural sits on the physical that we can't see, you know, how brains are grown and developed. Is there a case then that there's a lot of children who are being misdiagnosed or they're perceived to be, or that's ADHD, for example, or autism, or just other conditions that we were all probably quite familiar with, but actually on investigation, is there any evidence around that, or is it a suspicion, or is it just, you know, what's the evidence base around that?
Well, I mean, we're in a very sorry situation here where, you know, the current education system, we have a system here called the National Council for Special Education, the NCSE. And currently the NCSE does not recognise FASD as a neurodevelopmental disability. And for that reason, if your child has FASD, they will not receive support in school, in a mainstream school or a specialist school. They will not receive support for their condition of FASD. And the horror of that is that we know that children are being misdiagnosed with conditions, perhaps secondary conditions like ADHD, that they may have a bit of, but are not overriding to their overall condition. And they're getting support for ADHD rather than their FASD. Alternatively, they are being misdiagnosed with ASD, autism spectrum disorder, simply because it's more socially acceptable to say my child has autism as opposed to my child has FASD. And that's a real horror story, because, you know, we went through a period of time certainly where GPs and people working in the care industry were saying, well, you know, your child's got a label at least, so now you can get some help. And of course, we recognise now that the wrong label is as good as not having a label at all. And when I say label, you know, I'm referring to a diagnosis, but the labelling of the conditions was always the terminology until a few years back. So what we're trying to do here now is to have an open discussion with the Minister for Education, Minister for Special Education, Educational Needs and Inclusion, and also the Minister for Disability, so that we can talk about, and it is very much about talking about, the sheer numbers of children and young people in Ireland with FASD. We are currently the third highest per capita in the world of 187 countries with people with FASD, some 40,000 people estimated that live on the island with FASD, and estimated, and these are very conservative figures because, you know, they date back from 2016, and it's estimated 600 babies a year are being born with FASD. And since lockdown, you know, I've heard figures going around of 1,100, 1,200 babies, because we all know that through lockdown, people were drinking at home much more.
And that's out of a population of, is it 5.6 million?
5.2 million currently, So the prevalence is, again, these are all very conservative because we haven't had a prevalence survey here, but WHO estimated the figure to be at 4.75 per 100. So, or four, yeah, 4.75 per 100 people. So in a typical school of 600, 700 children, you're looking at 28 to 30 children. That's that's a lot of people.
And especially, as you say, if they're then back to the word labeled or perceived to be children with different conditions. And so you can't fix a broken leg with a paracetamol, can you? That's maybe a bit of a blunt metaphor, but you do need, I think that's one of the other things that I understand about FASD, is that once you know what is going on, it totally transforms how you then support, educate, the world you build around a child who's got FASD. So we're talking about FASD Ireland. So what are the primary aims for FASD Ireland?
Well, when I set up the organisation, I had three key aims, and one is prevention. So how can we work to prevent FASD? That absolutely has to be a goal for anybody working across FASD. How do we communicate? How do we educate? How do we try to reduce the numbers significantly of babies being born with FASD? So prevention would be our number one.
I'm going to get you on number one then, and not get you. I'm going to stop you. Get you.
All right, Patsman.
Yeah, I've been watching too much telly of late news. So is that given what you said about Ireland, about its kind of its cultural and historic and financial link to alcohol, because there's it's a huge industry. You know, we think about Guinness as is a international staple in most bars across the world. Is there
other drinks are available?
Other stouts are available. We are not sponsored by Guinness.
Not yet.
Is there a reticence, or is that a complicated issue? That how that is then? I know there's some alcohol labelling has.
It's really complicated, and I'll tell you for why. There's been a complete breakdown of trust between the health professionals and the drinks industry, and so never the twain will meet. And that's tough, because my belief is if you're part of the problem, then you're part of the solution. But okay, we have to live with that, and we have to work with that complete breakdown. And we can work with it in terms of that we need to start educating people from a reasonably young age that of the risks, but also we need to make FASD more publicly aware. So, for example, the backs of pub toilet doors, inside contraception packs, leaflets, going into schools and talking to, children in secondary school, children in higher or young people in higher education. We need to talk to the teachers, the family planning clinics. We need to talk to the GPs. You know, the horror stories are that a GP once said, FASD, so what type of autism is that? You know, we need to get that education, that message out there across Ireland, so that FASD drops off the tongue and everybody knows what it is.
Yeah.
And everybody knows what the risks are when drinking alcohol. I keep saying it, but the risks are when drinking alcohol, when trying to conceive, or when pregnant. You know, there is no safe amount of alcohol. The safe amount is zero.
Yeah, and in reality, we're not looking at a big hit on the drinks industry, are we? We're talking about pregnant women who are maybe less likely to drink anyway because of just all of the medical information out there. But for the sake of raising awareness, we're not talking about them losing a quarter of their revenue, are we? We're talking a tiny fraction. So,
but this is how bad it's got, is that there was legislation on statute book in 2018. It was the Public Health Alcohol Act Ireland 2018, actually legislated for the drinks industry to put labelling on containers and bottles containing alcohol that notifies people of the risks involved when drinking the alcohol when pregnant. The alcohol industry hadn't stepped up to do that. It's currently winging its way through the European courts right now. Because legislation has to go that way. We're looking at a delay now to that legislation being implemented until 2024 at the best. But, it flabbergasts me why the alcohol industry haven't stepped up to do it off their own back. They know it's coming. it's not going to affect them in any great way.
It's literally just ink on the label, isn't it?
It's literally ink on the label. And the upside of that small contribution to their packaging could save, you know, 600 babies being born a year with FASD, more. But we as a country, we have to wait. We have to wait because the alcohol industry will not step up to do that. And that's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so that's one aim. What's aim number two?
Yeah.
Okay, aim number two is support. And when I say support, it can mean many, many things. So supporting people with finding out their child has got FASD, what to do next. We can even take a step back from that. Support for people who think their child may have FASD. What do they do to get a diagnosis or to get an investigation? Support for people with FASD so that they can stay in school, so that they can go on to higher education, so that they can find work. There's all sorts of support that we as an organization should be able to offer and will be able to offer. We are new, but we have a plan. We have a really, really solid business case to be able to provide that support as we grow. And we know that the numbers of people coming forward with FASD and families coming forward wondering if their children have FASD will increase. Mm-hmm. So, the ideal model is to offer something very similar to the FASD Scotland Hub, which we like a lot. We think it's really, really good, and based on Scotland's population being almost the same number as Ireland, yeah, we can also kind of, if we're really nice to them, we can also find out roughly how much it's going to cost. we often talk about collaboration, but so far everybody that I've spoken to has very kindly collaborated. People really want this and they're happy to open the doors, come and talk to us, you know, open their books and say, well, this is what we've spent, this is what we've done, this is how many people we've helped.
Yeah.
It's really positive. So on the support side, we do have some really big plans and we don't see currently any obstacles to being able to deliver on those.
Because the nature of any sort of issue like this is often peer support is fantastic as well. And it's easy to set up. Just to connect people who are either with lived experience, people who are caring or parenting children who sort of have FASD, even just that peer support can be amazing, can't it? Just, you know, tips and tricks, you know, who's a good doctor in your town, all that kind of stuff. It can be just immeasurably useful, and it's cheap as chips. And so I think, like all of these issues, often you find that people like yourselves become quite passionate, and collaboration is in everyone's best interest, isn't it?
I definitely agree with the peer-to-peer support model. I think that it will take a little while to get off the ground, partly because of the social stigma we currently face with FASD. And, you know, there aren't so many care experienced children here with FASD diagnosis, again, for all of the reasons I've already stated. Most probably of the children and young people with FASD still live in birth families. So it will take time to develop a peer-to-peer support model. What I don't want to do, though, and this is really, really fundamental to how I planned FASD Ireland, I just did not want to become another grumble group. I think it's really important that we drive forward supporting people and doing something about it, you know, actually talking to the TDs, raising the awareness. And, I've had so far in 3 months, I've had 5 PQs asked. There was a 7-year gap before the last PQ was asked at Prime Minister's Questions. So I've
just,
had,
I've just had, Can you just explain what TD is and what PQ is?
Yeah, sure.
So, because we're talking a language that people might not.
Okay, so a TD is the equivalent to a UK MP. They're an elected representative, and they go to Dáil Éireann, which is our parliament building in Dublin. And PQs is where you would, traditionally a TD would submit a question to the minister responsible for whatever the question is, and then a response would come back. So, you know, the key here is, we have had five PQs asked, and there's been significant years where none were asked. And so what that does is it gets it on the agenda, it gets people talking about it. And that in itself is significantly more important. We have to get Ireland talking about FASD. Come, you know, hook or by crook, we have to do this.
And I guess you need that savviness about how you effectively change the narratives, isn't it? And so it's not about stabbing at things, it's about just trickling stuff through, isn't it? And then raising the profile. So we've had two wins.
Well, anybody who knows me, anybody who knows me will know that if I get a door slammed in my face, I'll go knock on the next one.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Or just keep knocking on the same one.
Or just keep knocking on it.
Go
yeah.
through the window.
Look, I'll be really honest with you. There have been some amazingly helpful TDs, you know, and they're from cross parties. So there's no particular political allegiance to this. There have been some real, real good doors opened. And there are also TDs that just won't come to the party. And, you know, everybody will have their reason for why they either want to engage or why they don't. But this is such an important issue for Ireland that we really, really have to get everybody talking about it.
Yeah. So what is your third aim then? Or have we covered that?
So I partly touched on it there. The third aim is to raise awareness.
Right.
And raising awareness, I don't just mean amongst the FASD community. I mean raising awareness in every community. Up and down the land, I have to talk about FASD to everybody I meet and anybody who can have an impact in whatever way to help the struggle with getting FASD awareness improved. I will talk to and I will ask them, you know, please, next time you're talking to whoever, please talk about FASD. And so raising awareness is, you know, a really important part of three objectives.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I have to confess that Scott's been as much use as a chocolate fire guard in this conversation.
Well, I don't feel like I've been able to, you know, interrupt your flow, Al, to be fair. You've obviously... And to be fair, I hear this all day, every day. So, you know...
I'm sure you do.
But what I do have some questions, believe it or not.
Go for it.
Because, obviously, the financing of such an organization, and I you know, our house isn't dependent on an income from it, obviously. It's can you explain the setup of the organization, because it's not a charity, is it?
Yeah, so currently I took a lot of advice from the local enterprise office here in Ennis, from people who I know run charities in the town, from the solicitors that we work with. I just took advice very early on, and the advice from everywhere was set yourself up as a company limited by guarantee. I think part of that was that I, in those conversations, I gave the inclination that I wanted to be in charge of the destiny of FASD Ireland. I didn't want trustees to have to answer to in terms of everything that I wanted to do. I think that it's so urgent and so important that we get this message across as quickly and succinctly as possible. I didn't want to be bogged down by the typical charity trust or trustee model.
Yeah.
And so a CLG, so a not-for-profit company limited by guarantee, was the model that was recommended to me. Now, you know, if we go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years into the future and the trustee or charity model looks better for us at that stage, then we've left the door open to do that. But right now, there is absolutely no desire to go down the charity model.
And I guess ultimately, the structure of the organisation's got to serve the cause, hasn't it? I guess that's the lead.
It absolutely has. Yeah. So, for example, we were taking new offices next week. The only person I had to ask about that was me.
Well, you say that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But this essentially, I don't have to go to a board of trustees and say, you know, I'd like to do this. Can we think? Can we have a meeting? Can we talk about it? Can we do this? So it allows for those decisions to come quickly when they're needed. And you know, our funding model is superb. We are absolutely self-sufficient. We are a not-for-profit organisation, so all of the income that we earn as FASD Ireland gets invested back into the work that we do. And I wanted that to be really, really significant for us, because there will be people out there that we need to talk to, provide education to, who simply can't afford to pay for it. And so I wanted FASD Ireland to be able to be in a position to be able to give something back to the community, to the people that, you know, need our help the most, but yet can't afford to pay for it. And of course, a lot of our income stream is from education. So we provide education into schools, to parents, to any professional that wants to learn more about FASD in Ireland, we will happily provide education to.
Yeah.
And so that's one of our biggest income streams.
And I guess as time goes on, it's like at the moment, it's almost like an introduction to what FASD is for some of these people, professionals and families, actually, because some people don't actually know what it is. So I'm guessing the development of that in time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this year I've got three sessions planned for an introduction to FASD. So they're on sale right now, and there's a link on the website. So go on, and if anybody's watching it, please book yourself a place.
What is the website? Give us the URL.
It's www.fasdireland.ie. Really easy.
Oh, that is really easy.
It is really easy, yeah. And the website is as growing at the same rate as we are. So, you know, I've again, to save costs, I've designed it myself, I've done the work myself, I add to it a little bit every day, and it's growing organically with the organization. So as we grow, the website will grow. There is an opportunity for us to draw down on some grant funding for the website, but I want to be at a stage where that money can be used usefully. Rather than just saying, well, okay, we're sort of 3-4 months in, let's spend €2,500 today. That doesn't feel right for me. So we're waiting. We're biding our time for that.
Mm. I mean, it's a shame you've had to do all that yourself, considering, you know, you live with a digital marketer, but, you know, whatever, he must be busy or something.
Allegedly, he's really busy. So I do on occasion pop in and say, can you help me with the Zoom? I've never used it before. I will say, you know, again, for those that know me, I have been a stay-at-home dad for 6 years, and the last piece of technology I used was a BlackBerry. I found out a couple of weeks ago that they're defunct. So it's been a huge learning curve for me. I've not done anything with technology that for the likes of what I have been doing. And, you know, Scott still sees me coming off Teams meetings, even one this morning that I had with a rather large company in Ireland, and I come off the Teams call and I dance around the kitchen going, that's another one, because it's just about talking to, you know, companies, but Teams people is allowing me to get up close with companies.
Technology is great. One question I was having, because obviously you're working at multiple levels, aren't you? You've got what is, you know, you've got like a governmental level, probably a local government level, you've got a professionals level, then you've got parents. What has been the response from parents and families to the to your messaging? You know, what feedback are you getting?
Well, the current feedback is just keep doing what you're doing. Right. We've got a lot of parents who are in touch with us through Facebook and Twitter, Instagram as well. Actually, is reaching a lot of parents, and I suppose the biggest request I've had from parents so far is about training, is about learning about FASD, and where I can, of course, you know, giving them some support and guidance over the telephone or through emails to be able to help them with their current situation. It's really important that we connect with families to be able to do that. And I have found the best way to do that is absolutely directly through social media. We reach at the moment, again, the latest figures, we reached 9,000 families in Ireland last month, which is quite significant.
That's a lot of families. And
In first 6 months, that is a lot of families, to be fair. And you know, not being funny, there's no other kind of, well, there's only one other organization that I'm aware of that provides any kind of tangible support to families with FASD. So, you know, for those 9,000 families to be kind of engaging is quite, that's a high amount for one country.
It is. You know, we've worked very closely with, there's a professor from Trinity College in Dublin, Katie Tobin. She's got a caregiver survey currently open till the 30th of Jan. There's a link on our website for that and on our Facebook. And that's the first time a survey has ever been done about caregivers to children and young people with FASD. Now, we could sit here and go, well, we'll retweet it or we'll Facebook it, or share it. But actually, we put a few hundred euro behind it, and we were able to get that out to 30,000 people across Ireland. Now, not all those 30,000 people will have or know or have any connection to FASD, but they might know somebody who it might affect. And so that was our best effort to try to get that survey into the communities. You know, it's very difficult to reach out to families that have FASD in them if they don't know what FASD is, if they don't have a diagnosis, and if they don't want to come forward and say, well, I was drinking while I was pregnant. And so the best way to do that, the survey is anonymous, and we just put it out there for all of these families. And, you know, we understand, I mean, we know what the click-through numbers are, and they're very good. So we understand that that has really had an impact on driving people to complete the survey. So we are waiting with bated breath now for the results of the first ever Ireland-based survey on FASD.
And the minute you get that, that sort of empirical evidence, then that starts to a ball rolling that's pretty pretty irresistible, isn't it, for you know, those that are in the powers that be, and also, you know, some of the industry as well, to kind of go, well, actually, this isn't just some parents bleating on about an issue. This is actual stuff, and that's a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and this is no way dismissive of the groups that support autism in Ireland, because they're very, very good, very proactive, and they do massive amounts of good work for people with autism in this country. But, and there's always a but, you know, the but is that so many young people have been misdiagnosed with autism, or they have been driven towards the autism diagnosis. And that needs to stop, because these children and young people actually need the right diagnosis to be able to carry on and live their lives properly.
Mm. Time's against us. So, Scott, any final questions for Tris?
This has to have probably been the hardest podcast / webcast I've ever done, because I live with this every day, so you know, it's really hard to kind of think up questions because I've been told so much and asked so much at the same time. So I must apologize to both our guests, but only in this kind of framework. Other apology for anything else that may have happened at any point during the 24 years we've been together. Exactly. And of course to the viewers and listeners, because Al's kind of led this one, but actually it's been good, because you know, Al, you kind of, you've admitted in the past, FASD is something of an enigma sometimes to you, even though you know a little bit about it. So, yeah, I guess the only question I would have is, like, you know, 5-year plan, I live day to day with it. I don't know what the plan is. Where do you want FASD Ireland to be in 5 years?
Well, I think, you know, a measure of our success will be a decrease in numbers of people being born with FASD. I think that is a measure. You know, we have to be able to measure our success and our impact. And with prevention being one of the key strands, key aims, then that is a measurable outcome. In terms of support, well, you know, if we do go down the road of the Scotland hub and provide something like that here in Ireland, then again, a measurable success of that hub is the number of people who are contacting it and the number of people we're able to help with the contact. And of course, raising awareness. You know, right now, I've given examples that would make people's toes curl. So this is about, you know, we just want to be able to see and hear FASD being talked about and openly a concern for people. So when they go to the off license to buy a bottle of wine, there's a warning on the counter that says, do not drink if you are thinking of conceiving or pregnant, and also on the bottle. And that again is measurable success of raising awareness, educating people, and, you know, being successful. I think that there's one other thing. I don't know if you've got another question for me, Al, but one thing I do want to say is that as an organisation, we are new. We're 4 months into what we're doing. One of the huge boosts that we got in late November was that the Hidden Disability Sunflower organisation in the UK identified us as a suitable organisation to work with in expanding their operation into Ireland.
Wow.
And so really one of the major assets we have is we have them on board with us, and everybody I talk to about FASD, I also talk to about the Hidden Disability Sunflower Scheme. There's no point having two conversations when one will do.
Yeah.
FASD is one of 10 neurodevelopmental disabilities, and all of those 10 would be representative of the Hidden Disability Sunflower. So it makes sense, absolute sense, in trying to raise awareness of FASD, but also we try to raise awareness of everybody with a hidden disability at the same time.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tris. Give me a rundown of where people can find you, just to top off with.
Okay, you're testing my internet.
Yes, I was just going to
Let's see. So the website is www.fasdireland.ie. The Twitter is @FASDIreland, all one word. The Facebook is /Facebook. And the Instagram is, I think, @Facebook, or is that wrong? I don't
know.
Why
are you at Facebook? And you're Facebook and everything, man.
Oh, yeah.
Everything, all of the socials are @FASDIreland. There you go.
There you go.
Except LinkedIn, which is LinkedIn is @FASD-Ireland. So there you go.
I have to say, one of my colleagues that Hidden Disabilities in the UK is very, very good and patient with me when it comes to technology. And I've just learned that I can click him on Teams and go help, which is really useful. So actually,
our
collaborative work with Hidden Disabilities is kind of teaching me IT skills.
Is that like the bell that you've got in the office when you need me? You just ring it, yeah?
That's for cups of tea.
Cups of tea.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on that note, I'm going to draw us to a close. I have places to be, things to do, of a Wednesday night. So, Tris, thank you so much for your time. Scott, thank you so much for your patience. Welcome. And we'll come back in a year and we'll find out where you're up to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, really good.
Thank you for joining us, everybody.
Yeah. There was a comment from Scotland saying, watching from Scotland, agree with all that's been said. People are not educated on FASD. So thank you for Claire Crask from Scotland.
Yeah,
I see that somewhere. Way. Okay, right. Well, look after yourselves, and I'll speak to you all soon.